Welcome to Everybody A, Everybody Gay,
a queer exploration of Pretty Little Liars.
With your hosts, Joanna, aka Speak Pirate. I'm here, I'm queer, and I have a cat named Spencer.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Bander Jesus.
Welcome, welcome to Everybody A, Everybody Gay, Antagonist Edition. We are talking tonight about all of the bad guys who are lurking around town in plain sight.
Yes, I think you mean the actual bad guys, as as Caleb would tell us, the actual bad guys he encountered in his rough days in Allentown.
Of course.
Yeah, we're going to talk about lots of different categories of antagonist on this show and kind of the good, the bad, what makes a good antagonist, what makes a less compelling antagonist, and just, yeah, kind of explore what's out there.
Yeah, and we talk, I mean, this show, obviously, Everybody A is in the name. We talk about A a whole lot, but there are a lot of people who are either like lesser members of the A team, or they're people who are just like kind of the daylight foil of the liars, like people who are putting obstacles in their paths and things like that. And those are really the ones that we are shining a spotlight on in this episode. So let's get to it. What do we feel like makes a good antagonist in the world of PLL?
Well, you know, one of the things that I was finding challenging as I was sort of defining this is it's kind of like, how do you even define an antagonist? How do you even define a villain on this show? Because at a certain point, the police become the antagonists. Also, there are a lot of characters who initially present in an antagonistic fashion and then become allies of the liars, or the reverse of that. Mm-hmm. So I think kind of the basic DNA of a compelling antagonist is a good solid reason to hate the liars, a compelling character construction that exists beyond just the role of foil, and a compelling performance.
Okay, I like that. I like that a lot. One of the things that I felt like, as I was thinking about this, made me feel like some were better than others. I think effectiveness, like, for example, I think that Wilden is better than Garrett because Wilden is, yeah, like, very, like, he's very successful at trying to frame the liars and trying to, like, call all of their actions into question in a way that Garrett just, I mean, like, Garrett, like, fake bludgeoned Allison with a hockey stick that was not the murder. Like, Garrett, yeah, like, Wilderness is more effective. So I think effectiveness is important. I also think the creep factor, like, when Prezra gives, you know, the sometimes the villain wins, sometimes they do, like, that just sends chills up your spine. Ian constantly lurking around the Hastings kitchen, like, those interactions that just, like, you know, kind of make your hair stand up a little bit. Like, so the creep factor, I think that that also, you know, indicates that they're being pretty good. Their motivation is personal. And this goes with what you said. They have, like, a clear, like, I feel like you could explain their motivation against the liars or a liar two sentences or less. Like, sure. So you don't have to start with, like, well, back in the 80s, when it was really the 40s, and it was a dark night outside Radley's, you know, asylum. Like, you know, you don't have to go into all of that. You could just be like, okay, like, yeah, you can just, you know, Jessica hates Spencer because she feels that Spencer bullying Allison started this whole, you know, this whole path. Sure. So, yeah. Their malice is ongoing is another criteria that I have. So, like, for example, Emily's ex-boyfriend Ben is awful, but he's never seen again, versus, like, Lucas, who just creeps around being creepy for years.
Oh, go ahead.
And then I was going to say they also operate kind of in broad daylight, often within a power structure that favors them, like you were mentioning, cops, teachers, doctors, older adults.
Parents. Yeah, absolutely. Just a side note about Ben, anybody out there listening who is also a fan of Yellow Jackets, it's a very weird situation where the actor who plays Ben on PLL is a very sympathetic character on Yellow Jacket. So it's a strange turn for that actor, for sure.
Love that for him.
So can we maybe define these categories a little bit more, because I think we both individually kind of came up with some categories of villain. What are some of the categories you have and who places in what for you?
Okay, sure. So I feel like there are a lot of different categories. Some of the antagonists are peers of the Liars. So they're, you know, people who are also in high school, roughly overlapping with when the Liars are. So that'd be like Lucas, Ben, Sarah Harvey, Jenna, Noel, Sydney, Isabel, Hannah's... Is Isabel the wicked stepsister, or is Isabel the wife?
Kate is the stepsister. Isabel is the stepmother.
Okay, so Kate then, the wicked stepsister. So like these are other characters who, like, although Jenna sometimes seems like she has supernatural powers or whatever, like basically the power that these people have is like commensurate with the power of the Liars, like roughly, like high school student to high school student. And then my other category would be older men with unsavory intentions. So that would be Wilden, that would be Garrett, that would be Holbrook, Prezra, Ian, Ren, Zach, a rogues gallery there. Then I would have like Father Knows Best and other adults. These are kind of the parental or semi-parental antagonists. Byron, who of course knows a lot of what Allison was up to but doesn't say because of his own affair that he wants to keep secret. Ken De Laurentiis, who I think it was our listener Grace who like kind of described him as if transphobia were a guy.
Yeah,
which I love that. Ken, Peter Hastings, Jessica De Laurentiis, Mary Drake, and also Meredith. Byron's side chick. So those are some overall categories. And then we have commonalities between them. We see that like Wilden, Garrett, Holbrook, Tanner, Marco, and Tobey, those are all members of the Rosewood Police Department.
Sure.
And it's interesting that like Wilden, Garrett, and Holbrook are explicitly corrupt. Like we specifically mm-hmm. know that they were compromising their police duties or police investigations. But I don't feel like they are necessarily more antagonistic towards the Liars than like Tanner is or Marco is or sure. Tobey is at different points. And all those three are all supposed to be sort of like, you know, quote unquote, the good cops. Then we have teachers and coaches, a category that includes such heavy hitters as Prezra, Byron, Ian, and Hackett, who I'm putting on this list because he is an enabler of this whole situation. And then we have doctors, Ren, and of course, Rollins. And then we have the NAT grouping, which includes Ian, Garrett, Melissa, Jason, to a lesser extent, and Jenna. And then I also have a category for wanted to bang a liar slash liars, which includes Lucas, Ben, Zach, Prezra, Wilden, Holbrook. Ren, Ian, Cousin Nate, Marco, Noel, and Shauna Costume Shop, who I am putting on there because I definitely believe she wanted to get with Allison, and she was allegedly sending flirty texts to Emily at one time that we never got to see. I don't forget. And then we have boyfriends and husbands, Prezra, Tobey, Marco, Ben, and Rollins. And then I also have a category called allegedly created by the Liars or Allison. And that list includes Lucas, Jenna, Sarah, and Meredith.
Wow, what a thorough list. What a thorough list. Did you have a category on there for siblings?
Oh, I didn't. I just had Melissa under the NAT listing.
Okay.
But definitely that. I would put them maybe in the Father Knows Best category for like other adults or family members.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I have a nefarious parent figures and then a nefarious siblings, which, you know, Melissa, Mike, Jason, Charlotte, Melissa. Alex.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I find it really interesting. You know, you made the point about the sort of how, like, within the structure of, like, the cops, for example, there's the ones who are sort of coded as, like, bad or anti-liar, and the ones who are maybe coded as more like good cops but still foils. And I feel like we see a version of that play out in a lot of these categories, because I think, like, if we think about, like, creepy men, you know, you have a character like Ian, who is explicitly within the text understood to be a creepy man. And then you have somebody like Prezra, who is arguably doing many of the same things and is in some ways worse because he actually marries his, you know, essentially his victim. But he is coded as, like, a romantic hero. Similarly, within the category of parents, you have somebody like Kenneth De Laurentiis, who is frequently coded as a villain. And then you also have somebody like Byron Montgomery, who strangely will get this sort of hero edit sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to think about the ways in which, like, an antagonist is really all about perception, right? And all about the framing. Because, like, there are moments when a character like when Holden first comes on the scene, he's kind of framed as, like, there might be something weird with Holden. And then it's like, no, he's just getting his, you know, has his exploding heart disease and is secretly gay. He's fine, you know. Or somebody like Sarah Harvey, who goes from, you know, the belief of her just as, like, a straightforward victim to, you know, actually she was working for Charlotte, to this idea of, like, okay, but, like, did the liars create her? You know, it makes me think about, you know, that idea of, like, this is kind of a heavy idea to bring into this conversation, but of, like, they're not being perfect victims, you know, that no victim is perfect, because certainly there are characters on this list that you wouldn't qualify as a victim, but there are others who it's a little harder to say. They exist in multiple spaces at the same time.
Yeah, I would for sure agree with that. And I think that it's interesting to think about how the through line, like, goes of these characters who were, like, created, the characters who were, like, created by the liars. Like, so it's one of those things where the idea is, like, well, if the liars just had not thrown the firework into the garage, would Jenna have a vendetta against them for years and years? And that's a pretty clear-cut one. Should the liars have thrown a firework into the garage? No, they should not have.
Sure.
But when you get that story, you know, when it comes around the second time, and it's like, should the liars have decked Sarah Harvey, who was trying to detonate a bomb that would blow all of them up? Should they have punched her and thus, like, knocked her into some electricity that may or may not have taken her hands? Then I feel like we're just really sort of, like, going a bit out of our way to cast blame onto the liars.
Yeah, I think that Shauna is a really interesting example of this. And yes, that's probably the first and last time that somebody will use the words Shauna and interesting in the same sentence. But the whole idea that she was sort of deployed by Allison as a minion and then ended up kind of, you know, sort of double agent, falling in love with the person that she was supposed to be spying on, and then, you know, doubled back on Allison. It's that way in which PLL, the writing on PLL is so fascinating in the way that certain people just have, like, absolute power over other people. And it's a show that is, on a show that, like, in a lot of ways is about the agency of young women, it is really interesting to me the way that so often characters are sort of powerless against other characters. And, you know, we've talked about this before, the whole idea that there'll be these little, like, team-ups of alignments and sort of alliances and, you know, well, this person is on Team Allie or Team Mona or Team Jenna. And it's kind of like, well, once you are on a designated team, like, you're just a minion. You're just in minion mode, which I always found, like, not very compelling, because it's like, okay, so you're just sort of being dispatched for somebody else. But it's, I don't know, there's something there about sort of this idea of, like, at what point do you go, at what point do you cross the threshold into true villainy? You know, at what point do you have sort of agency over your own villainy?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think that, like, Sydney is a super boring example of that. Like, we've talked sure. about, like, all she ever seems to be is a minion for Jenna. Right. In which case, I would rather have Jenna lurking around being villainous as opposed to, like, you know, Sydney is, like, the flavor-free, you know, version of that antagonist, I think.
Well, and then it's, like, the weird sort of shell game of Sydney's sexuality of, like, she can't just be in love with Jenna. It has to be this weird, like, no homo best friendship thing.
Which is super strange because similar to, and I guess this is another thing that we can talk about, is, like, the queer coding of the
yes.
antagonist on PLL. You know, we have Allie, who's always kind of half good, half bad for, like, the first, you know, the first five seasons until she kind of settles into, you know, alien housefrau mode. So we have Allie, who is queer, who is kind of the queen bee who, you know, threw the firework and who, you know, made loser Mona into a monster and all of this. So we have Allie, who's kind of a queer-coded villain whose queerness isn't explicit until kind of the very end of the series. We have Allison, we have Jenna, who there's this constant, like, oh, she's flirting with Emily, she's maybe dating Shauna, but we're, like, not saying that, like, out loud for whatever weird reasons. After Shauna's dead, she's, like, disconsolate. But again, and like, there's that weird scene in the locker room where Paige is like, were they dating? And, like, there doesn't seem to be, the show doesn't seem to offer us a canon answer. So again, there's Shauna, who, like, it seems like she was in love with Allison. That's why she came up from Georgia to, like, do this whole infiltration situation. And then, you know, we hear that she fell in love with Jenna. Again, question mark, question mark. So there's all this queer coding. There's Mona and Sydney. There are characters who their motivations only make any kind of sense if it's because they're queer. And yet the show is like, we don't care if we make sense or not, but they're queer. Like, it's strange.
It is really strange. And it's fascinating too, because it's like, and in some ways, I think more insidious to the most insidious in the ways that, like, it's not just they're queer and they're a villain. It's like their queerness is intrinsic to their villainy, because, you know, you have, like, Mona, where it's like sort of her obsession, her very gay obsession with the liars kind of drives her to become A. And you have Shauna, who falls in love with Jenna, and then that leads to her betraying Allison. You have Charlotte, who, you know, there's sort of implications, whether or not the show wanted to own up to the implications it was playing with, that her transness was related to her villainy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, there's sort of, you have Alex Drake, right? Who's like this queer-coded thing with Arya and wanting to kill Prezra. I think it feels like a relic from a different time a little bit.
I totally agree. You have Sarah Harvey, who also yes. has this sour girls connection with Jenna.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, okay, so what are you saying is happening?
Yeah, exactly. And there's sort of this implication with Jenna of, like, well, she's just kind of collecting women in this, like, cabal, and then they get brutally murdered, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't really know what to make of it, you know? I think, because it's one of those things where I'm like, well, would I rather that these characters weren't queer-coded? And I don't think that that's the answer, because I like the queerness of Mona and of Jenna. I just wish that the show had, like, not been so wishy-washy, I think. I wish that they'd let these characters be queer and at least let some of them be redeemed. Not because every queer character needs to be a hero, but because at a certain point, you're just telling the same story over and over again.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I also think, like, what would have gone a long way. Like, let's say that the show had had other trans characters besides Charlotte, some of whom were good, some of whom were bad, some of whom were just regular. I think that changes the game from, like, well, we had one trans character and it was a major villain and then we killed her off. Like, that's a little different. So I think if they had had, like, more developed queer characters in general. I mean, I know that we have, like, a line of not particularly interesting women who Emily dates. But if they had, like, I don't know. I feel like if they had more consistent queer characters who, like, either were heroes or were just regular, it would not stick out so much that they have all these antagonists who are queer-coded. But also, I think that PLL is very much about, like, you know, who's in with the in crowd and who are the outsiders. And I think that there's definitely a connection between, like, the idea of the outsiders and the idea of the queers.
I would agree. I would agree. And lest we forget Paige, who at various points, her queerness and her villainy are definitely connected.
Yes. All of the false flag Paige's bad guy operations.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you say of these categories that we talked about? Do you have, like, a favorite category of villain?
Ooh, that is interesting. I mean, I think I'm a fan of the patriarchy being kind of the villain of the piece.
Yeah.
Or, like, the male gaze being the real villain, like the Rosewood institutions as the villain. So in that sense, I really think that, like, the villains who are, like, the older men who, like, want something from the liars, I feel like that is often just, like, because that's something, you know, this is a show that, like, exists in a really heightened reality, but this is a kind of skeeziness and a kind of creepiness that exists in the world on the regular. And so I feel like, you know, I feel like when you're looking at Ian or when you're looking at Kresra or when you're looking at, like, Wilden, I just feel like, oh, Garrett, who's like a cop who's dating this high school girl, like,
yeah,
that is just like, that is a story that we have all seen exist in the part of our world that, like, overlaps with the show world. So I think that those are... I think those are, like, some of the most well-written antagonists because it just feels very true to life.
Well, I agree. And I also think when the show, you know, we talked last week about the idea of, and I'm actually really, we were initially just a little behind the scenes. We were initially going to record our villains episode first. And I'm actually really glad we recorded our men episode first, because I think it made me think about that idea of, like, when the show is, I think, for lack of a better phrase, sort of in on the joke, in on the, like, in on the fact of, like, yes, we are commenting on patriarchy intentionally. I think when the show lets the villains be sort of part of patriarchal systems, it tells us as the viewer that they are telling the story that we want to listen to and that we want to watch. Versus sort of stumbling into a villain or just kind of falling back on, like, some random family member or making up a family member to fall back on.
Yeah. Hard agree.
Yeah. There. Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to talk about, like, beyond the categories, villains themselves, like, some of your favorite and least favorites?
Yeah. I was trying to make a list of, like, my top five antagonists, but it was too hard. So I think I have, like, I have maybe six on my list right now.
Okay.
I think we're probably both in agreement on, like, our top number one antagonist of the show. Is yours Presra?
It's gotta be Presra.
I mean, you gotta go. You gotta go with Presra. So I think Presra is, like, at the top because, and, like, this also goes to, like, another thing. We'll talk about this. We'll go back and forth. We'll go all around the world. There are some things that, like, we always wanted from the show that we didn't necessarily get. And I feel like when PLL came on, you know, PLL existed before Riverdale existed. But it existed after shows like Veronica Mars had existed, or after shows, you know, like The OC had existed. So, like, in some ways, it was like there were parts of it where it's just like a teen show, a teen soap that we've, you know, we've seen other teen soaps before. And then there are ways that, like, PLL was really unique. And I feel like Prezra is, like, the perfect antagonist, because if they had pulled the trigger on him actually being A, I feel like that is a story we had not seen on a teen show before, where somebody who was like the professed love interest of one of the main characters had been working against them the entire time and had been like the villain the entire time. So still really upset that the show walked that back. But yeah, Prezra number one, top antagonist. Who's someone else who's on your list?
So I agree, Prezra. I have, it's kind of funny because it's like there's like the people who are satisfying to have as a villain and who are also just fun as villains. I mean, in terms of that, Mona, you know, you gotta give it to Mona. She's such a delightful, a complicated character. She's the protagonist. She's the antagonist. She's the one on the outside watching the whole thing from, you know, shaking up the little snow globe. Like, I gotta say, of course, my girl Mona.
Well, and Mona antagonizes him in her Mona face, and like, and separate from her A face. So yeah. I love that. I love that as a call out. Now, did you include on your list, did you include other A's on your list, like Charlotte or Alex Drake? I didn't generally, just because I was like, well, A is like its own thing if you're the main A.
A is the only thing. I have Alex Drake on my list of least favorite villains.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I also have Jenna, because I think she's a really fun one. Very, very fun. How about you? Who else do you have on your favorites list?
I also have Jenna because, again, I think that Jenna is someone you would only see on PLL. Like, Jenna is a character who could, like, kind of only exist within this PLL universe. Although, mm-hmm. I guess she could go tapping over to Riverdale and it would be like, well, okay, now we have this, you know, now we have this witch who's named Jenna. But I also have Ian. I think that he was like super creepy. And in terms of effectiveness, like, you really did believe that he was going to kill Spencer in the bell tower. Like, So Ian, Wilden, I think, is like a super, you just love to hate him. Like,
yeah.
And that, like, there's a lot of energy to that. And then, just because the post-jump world was such a dull place, and then she came along, Mary Drake.
Sure.
I will say that Mary Drake is an antagonist that I enjoyed. She really gave life to a lot of scenes that in an otherwise lifeless time. So, surprising myself, Mary Drake makes my list. But also, like, maybe I just want there to be a member of the Hastings family on here, because I also do have to say Melissa. Love to see her getting up to some schemes against the Liars.
Melissa is for sure on my list. I mean, the thing about Melissa is that, much like Jenna, she is a villain that we return to time and time again. I honestly think one of the things that I wanted to talk about is, like, why do we return to certain villains? And, you know, some of it, I think, is laziness. Some of it is, I think, they had constructed a really good character and it was fun to come back to them. When I think of Melissa, I always think of the scene where she steals Arya's frozen yogurt. it's such a subtle villain move, but such a deeply villainous move. I also had, similarly to Melissa, had to include Ren. Because he's another one of the kind of hiding in plain sight villains. You know, he's also, you know, what a brutal end to him, being turned into an eternity stone. And then, speaking of brutal ends, we have to, hats off to Nolcon. really ends up being quite the villain by the end of the series. And even though I don't love that, I do think that he was always a really fun burst of energy for the series.
Yeah, I definitely have no complaints about that. And I think that one thing that you see in terms of like all of the people that we just talked about, and I think that this is another element that makes a good antagonist, that it can like kind of lead us into like what makes a crappy antagonist. All of the people that we just mentioned, they feel like they're a match for the liars.
Yes.
Like, they are smart, clever people. Melissa's IQ, we hear in the first episode, is slightly higher, but statistically insignificantly higher than Spencer's. We know how conniving and how, Prezra has like limitless financial resources. He's in a position of power at the school. Ditto Ian. And Ian also has power within Spencer's own family because, there's this like, don't make waves. Let's all be polite about Melissa's, so he has power like within the school structure, the community structure, and the family structure. Wilden is a cop. Like, there are serious consequences to kind of, going up against him. I feel like they all feel like they're a match. Like, Jenna feels like possibly superpowered at times. I feel like having an antagonist who feels like they are a smart person, they are capable, and with Mona too, like a smart person who's capable of manipulating the situation, who like we're kind of the underdog if we're going up against them. That makes the liars seem smarter. Whereas when you have a bad antagonist, it's like, this is boring. This is like an uninteresting character that we're pitting ourselves against. It's really obvious that they're a bad guy, but the liars somehow don't realize it. So that would be like, the liars don't realize this person has really shady intentions. Cousin Nate, Meredith, Dr. Rollins, Meredith is superior to the others because she is not boring. But there's an unclear motivation. Sarah Harvey, Sydney, Cousin Nate, Sean, a costume shop. Like, I think that those are the things that make a bad antagonist. And when you're dealing with a bad antagonist, it makes the liars seem, it makes the liars seem stupider because you can't figure out a way to beat Sarah Harvey. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, she might not even have hands at this point in the show.
It's not clear.
We don't know. But like, you can't figure out a way to best Sarah Harvey. You can't figure out a way to best, like, Where's the Beef Sydney. You can't figure out that Rollins is a creep for how many episodes? Come on.
Yeah. Well, you think about like, something like the game of truth in the con game where, Spencer goes toe to toe with, it's Spencer versus, Jenna and Arya versus Noel.
Yes.
Okay. And like the stakes of that are comparatively lower than a lot of the conversations the liars will have with various antagonists, particularly later in the series. But it's so compelling because, it's well written and it's well directed, but it's also just these characters have a complex inner world and are being played and written with a level of confidence that like, we want to know more about them. We're intrigued watching them. And it makes for a much, much brighter, more interesting television.
Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely agree. So who are some of your bottom of the barrel antagonists?
Okay. Well, I already mentioned Alex Drake. You've mentioned a lot of the ones on this list. Shauna for sure. Sarah Harvey. Garrett, I found pretty boring. Mm. And then I have on here Allie as villain, because I think that there are definitely moments when Allie being framed as a villain is quite you know, does capture one's interest. But I also think that that is a drum that they just started to beat over and over again. And especially when you pair that with the Hausfrau Alley, where it was kind of the thing that we were talking about towards the end of the series, where it was like, well, everything was Allie's fault. She was the nucleus of every bad thing that's happened in this whole entire town. I just found that to be really dull. And I think what was a more interesting idea for me for Allison was the idea of like, what does redemption look like for somebody like this? And maybe like, could we talk a little bit about redemption and sort of the idea of like a redeemed antagonist versus a misunderstood antagonist versus like all the time antagonist?
Yeah, I think that that would be, but I do want to say like, when you talk about Allie as villain, I would like to kind of like just sort of look at, and I think this will lead us to the redemption stuff that you're talking about. Look at the way that Allie is framed as a possible villain for the whole run, like right up until they solidify her supposed goodness by having her marry Emily, who is like a beam of light. So Allie is like constantly like, is she a villain? Is she not a villain? What's going on with her? Paige also has the is she a villain edit, like straight through to like the final camera shots of her looming over Allison. Like,
sure,
you know, we always get that vibe of what they're doing with Paige. Mona, again, always looked at as like, is she good? Is she bad? What is she? So we have these women who can never do, like, they can never satisfy the show's, like, you know, the eye of Sauron or whatever. Like, they can never, like, satisfy the question of, are they really good? Like, they're never going to be good enough for the show to, like, stop casting them as the maybe villain because they're bad women. Versus dudes on the show who are constantly doing shady, sketchy, controlling stuff, who have been on the A-team before, who have, like, been tape recording everybody all over town with no consequences. So, like, you look at those women, and then you look at Tobe, who joined the A-team how many times? I don't know. Like, Tobe, who was on the A-team, Prezra, who was, like, deceiving everyone, operating under super false pretenses. Caleb, who is not on the A-team, but who is, like, a controlling jerk in his relationship with Hannah. But, like, all of these people are, like, you know, they have, like, a brief period where they're getting some villain edits, and then everything is just, like, right as rain. All any of these men have to do to be forgiven is to ask, and maybe not even that.
Yeah, yeah, I think that that's really, really true. I think it maybe just comes from this sort of larger societal comfort with forgiving men and discomfort with forgiving women. Men are always sort of given this benefit of the doubt, and women are not. It really is true. And it's like, there are certain men that are slotted into the category of villain, like Wilden, like Rollins. But then other men just sort of get to drift between various categories and ultimately be, you know, defended by everybody else on the show. And I think that, like, I don't know. I guess I don't know what to make of it. I don't know what the story gains by having Mona never be fully redeemed, for example.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's to go with something that Mona once said, it's a carrot stick. That was the last carrot. I feel like it's just a carrot stick that we're constantly dangling in front of her as like a possible character motivation. But why on earth are we gonna continue to hold that against Mona forever and ever, when Toby pretended to be dead and Spencer was institutionalized with grief? And then as soon as they're back together after that, he's stealing the RV and making her lie to all of her friends about it. But like, that's all good.
And none of these things ever get brought up again.
No,
you know?
Like there's no,
yeah.
Like, the men are not required, like, go forth and sin no more is not a requirement that is ever placed on any of these dudes. And also, like, making a full, like, you know, making a full recounting of your misdeed, making, like, you know, making amends is not required of any of these men.
Yeah, yeah, and it's, you know, it's funny because it's like you have Toby on the A-team, you have Caleb at various points, you know, he helps Jenna, he's sort of going behind Hannah's back at different points, and it's like at a certain point, it's like, what is the difference between pretending to be on the A-team and just being on the A-team? What is really the functional difference between Prezra, you know, just letting all of the A stuff play out and being a part of the A-team himself?
Yeah, I, you know? there is not a difference. Like, I think this comes down to something that we've talked a lot about in the past, like, you know, maybe 5 years as a society, whether intent actually outweighs impact. And I think we all have to say, no, it doesn't. Are you going to be like Tobey being, well, I was only pretending to be on the A-team when I, like, broke Hannah's arm or whatever. Like, well.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, if they can misdirect the audience for so many episodes for us to think that Prezra is A based on his actions, at a certain point, he's just existing as A in everything but name.
Yes.
Yeah, you know?
100%. Well, I feel like the show loves to do... It loves to do the walkbacks. It loves to do, like, well, Ian was having this affair with Allison, except, no, they were just platonically hanging out. You know, maybe Allie wanted to seduce him, but they were just, like, walking on the beach in a, you know, a very innocent way there in South Carolina at the hotel.
They were just good friends.
Yeah, they walked that right back. And then they walk back, like, anything that any of the men do, they just want to be like, oh, they're so bad. No, they're not. It was just pretend. Like, for example, mm-hmm. when it's very early on, it might even be like at the end of the first season when Toby says, pretending to hate you was the hardest thing I ever did.
Yes.
Well, like, okay, so treating someone like you hate them. And because you're pretending versus treating someone like you hate them because you hate them. Like, is there a difference for Spencer, the girlfriend you are pretending to hate?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. If it's impacting her the exact same way, how is it different at all? Similarly, I think you have sort of the flip side of that with Mona, where, you know, at the end of season two, when there's sort of that idea that Mona might give up the game and pin it all on Melissa, and she's sort of tricked the liars into inviting her into her group in this way where she's sort of just become part of their group, you know? And it's kind of like, at a certain point, what is the difference but the name?
Well, and, like, what is the difference? Like, what is the difference between Mona being Hannah's openly declared friend and her undeclared enemy? What is the difference
Sure.
between Mona being, like, an undeclared lover of Hannah versus Lucas being a declared lover of
Mm-hmm.
her? Like, what?
Sure.
Like, what are the differences between these things if, like, the impact of them is identical?
I don't know, it's interesting. There's a lot that I think the show left on the table there that they could have explored further.
Well, yeah, especially with all of the work that the show has done in its good periods around identity. Like, mm-hmm, what is, mm-hmm. when you look at the NAT club, and when you look at the fact that this club was, like, recording all of these different, you know, like private interactions all over town. Like, mm-hmm. what is the difference between, you know, Wilden presumably being involved in it, Garrett being involved in it, Jenna being involved in it in some way? What is the difference between their involvement and the involvement of Melissa or the involvement of Jason? Like, the only differentiator we have is Jason says that he regrets his involvement, which is not much, but it's more than we get from anyone else who is involved with that.
Yeah, Jason is an interesting character because I feel that I don't know that he does a lot to redeem himself, and yet I feel okay about cutting him a pass a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, I agree.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. There's a lot there for sure.
Yeah, I just feel like the only characters who get redemption ever are the dudes.
Yes, yes. I think that you're right. I think that you're absolutely right.
And it's like, it's not because they earn it. It's just because, like, the storyline seems to demand it. Like, if they're going to be part of an OTP, then they have to be, like, the virtuous knights.
Well, and at a certain point, too, especially towards the end of the series, there seems to be this attitude of, like, well, the liars are being unreasonable, but the men, they know what's up. They know the truth. Right. Which I find to be a very frustrating take.
Well, and again, like a situation where it just kind of makes the liars seem dumb.
Yeah, dumb and like sort of not terribly likable.
And passive.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So what are some of the things that you wanted to talk about with regard to the villains of PLL?
Oh, well, we've talked about their queer coding. I would like, so to what extent do you think that the real antagonists are the institutions of Rosewood? Like, to what extent are the police, the school, the male gaze, the actual villains, at least in the early part of the show?
That's a really good question. Do you mean, when you ask that question, do you mean that the show is framing them as the villains, or that we, the audience, can interpret that?
Both. You can answer both of those questions.
Okay. So I think that Rosewood progressively becomes more and more the villain of the show. And I think, particularly after the time jump, the liars talk a lot about this idea of, like, we keep coming back to Rosewood, we keep returning to Rosewood, you know, can you ever get out of Rosewood? And I think that that's partially what makes the time jump kind of incomprehensible, because they keep finding reasons for them to stay there. And then B, makes Allie's ending so grim, because it's like she never gets to leave. I guess she does when she goes off to Beacon Heights, but I don't know. I think that I always wanted them to more explicitly have, like, the school or the police force as an institution be against the liars. And unfortunately, it seems like they often chose to kind of weirdly do this thing of, like, it's like with the police, like, it's sort of a bad apples thing, but then it's like, but it's all bad apples. It's like a whole barrel of bad apples, but we're not just allowed to call it a barrel of bad apples. And I think if the show had, like if they had really leaned into it and kind of done sort of a Buffy season 3 with the mayor kind of situation, where the liars, I know that, like, you've written this into Fix and talked about the idea of, like, the liars actually kind of transforming Rosewood, that would have been so satisfying to me. Instead, they sort of settle on this middle ground where it's like, well, the cycle continues, but it's so weird in that series finale, because the cycle is continuing, but it's not really clear why the cycle is continuing. Because is it like, are we just located over a hellmouth? Like, what's the situation here? Why is it just the idea, like, well, teenage girls are always going to be mean? I don't know. I do think that if there's sort of an overall system that is antagonizing the liars, it's them not being believed, which I think is such a common experience for young women.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Like, I just think that when you look at the way that so many of the men who are antagonizing them are doctors are,
sure,
you know, who are like controlling, like, these women actually being institutionalized or not, like what their freedoms are going to be. Mona is institutionalized. Spencer is institutionalized. Mary Drake was institutionalized. Charlotte was institutionalized. Like, so many of, you know, Allison was institutionalized. Like, so many of these men wind up holding, like, the freedom of the liars in their hands. Also, the same thing with the police. You know, what they are, what they are not, what freedoms they are not allowed to have or to experience, what actions they feel the liars should be punished for. You know, so in these ways, I feel like those men exist because the power structure of the town allows them to exist. You cannot tell me that Ren King's supervisors were never aware of him hitting on underage girls. Come on.
Well, and there's a lot more. I think that the system that gets to be the most explicitly corrupt is probably Radley, because there's a lot of stuff like with Eddie Lamb and with the implications of like things that happened to Mary Drake and things that happened to Charlotte, that like this, there was a lot of weird stuff happening here. The badges that were going missing, you know, all of that.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. But like, then again, like Hackett calls Arya into his office to find out if she's broken off her relationship with the teacher. He knows that she was dating. Like,
yes.
Lord.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not good. It is not good.
Not great, Bob. So yeah, I just think it's interesting to think about like the ways in which like the town is like, the town is kind of like the enforcer of like the kind of young women they want the liars to be, and the liars are not conforming to that, and that creates just like so much friction as the storylines go on.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it makes me think of in the pilot when Emily is talking to Pam about how, you know, not everybody dreams of making it in this town. Some people dream of making it out.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's all really good. And also then I guess I wanted to talk about, what do we think about the way that another common theme, particularly with the female antagonists, particularly with Jenna, particularly with Sarah Harvey, particularly with, I would say, Charlotte, we have a message of like, you can't believe what these people tell you about their lived experience. Can Jenna see? Does Sarah Harvey have hands? Is Charlotte, like, has she, you know, has she overcome, like, elements of her mental illness?
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like, well, if it's, you know, they just exist on the list of, like, the untrustworthies, the unreliables. I don't know what to make of it. I think that it's again a way that the women are treated that the men frequently are not. Maybe some men are treated that way, but most of them aren't. And I do think an interesting thing is like Ian comes from a place of more power. And so like when Spencer is trying to say like, I feel unsafe with him in the house, people are listening to Ian. When somebody like Jenna is saying, you know, these are the things that have been done to me, I guess sometimes you have like the people that Jenna's quote unquote charmed, but a lot of times Jenna is not listened to. And so I think that it's kind of, it kind of mirrors the way that these people are dealt with societally, right? People with disabilities, people from marginalized communities, people of color, like these are really common themes that we see playing out all the time, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Okay, so here's another question. We talked a little bit about like antagonists that could only exist, like they're kind of unique to the PLL universe.
Sure.
who are some of the people, the antagonists who we would only see on PLL versus, like, who could we imagine turning up on a similar CW show either before or after?
That is such a good question. I'm going to say, for better or for worse, I'm going to say Sarah Harvey is a PLL villain through and through. Just because the absurdity of this girl who, like, looks like these other girls who may or may not have hands, like, that's PLL through and through.
I also feel like Noel Kahn.
Yes. Like, yes.
Noel Kahn is very PLL. Wilden and Byron and Presra, I think, are very PLL. But then I would say ones where we get into, like, they could be on any show. The Wicked Stepsister that Hannah has, like, I feel like, you know, we've seen that before. Zach, the coffee shop owner about to marry Ella, who hits on Hannah. I feel like that's something that could be on another show. Ben, the abusive ex-boyfriend who's mad that Emily is queer now. Again, feel like that could be on a variety of shows. Diane Fitzgerald, throwing all of her money around, wildly wealthy mother of Presra. I feel like, there are like five of her running around Gossip Girl, I'm pretty sure. And then also I would say Maggie/Jackie/Nicole, like all of the women who are brought in to be part of the great Presra love triangles. I feel like they're from fill in the blank. They could be on any teen show.
Funnily, I'm going to say, I think that Mary Drake and Jessica De Laurentiis both feel specific to PLL. I think that Alex Drake feels like she could be from another show.
Oh my gosh. Alex Drake could definitely be from, like, Riverdale, I feel.
And that's, I think, part of what makes her a less compelling villain is that she does not feel specific to the world of PLL.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I do agree about Mary and Jessica too, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such an interesting question. I mean, it's always fascinating to consider PLL existing in other universes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like Mary and Jessica, it's interesting because, like, when I think about, like, would they be, like, on Days or something? But no, they do feel, like, especially the dark twin, the dark twinness of Mary Drake, who's constantly, like, you know, she owns this creepy motel and she's constantly, like, slinking around and she says everything in such a dramatic way. She's got the PLL in her DNA for sure.
She's unto herself.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Going back to A for a second, what do you feel like when different people are behind the hoodies, what is being represented?
Well, you know, one thing that's really interesting is that the declared A's, like the identity of A's that we are given within the context of the show, is it's only ever women. It's only ever, you know, it's Mona, it's Charlotte, and it's Alex. And I think that that's really interesting, especially given what we've talked about the way that, like, female antagonists can never be redeemed versus, like, male antagonists who, like, barely have to even ask. I feel like that is just a way that the show has, like, forever and ever into the universe infinity, has just failed to hold men accountable for anything.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that so often these female villains are just framed as, like, crazy. They're crazy. These A's. And then you have, like, Toby's little stint on the A-team, which to me feels just like pure male rage, you know, this pure rage against his girlfriend and this need to sort of solve all the mysteries himself.
Well, I think that you could, like, if we counted in how many episodes that Toby appears, is he an antagonist or is he, like, does he appear as an antagonist? Does he appear as an ally? like in season one, there's the whole like pretending to hate you is the hardest thing I've ever done. So like he pretends to hate Spencer for a stretch of season one. And he's given like the creepy edit
when he's
maybe involved with Emily. Right. Yeah. So he might have murdered Allison. Like so you get him kind of as an antagonist in the early days, which Spencer is like maybe sort of drawn to. And then in what happens in the second season is he I guess things seem kind of okay then. He leaves, but he goes to get Dr. Sullivan. He leaves, but he goes to get her. So he like bounces for part of that, and they like have fights and stuff. But then in season three, we have him having joined the A-team for fakes. To help, you know, find whatever out he doesn't ever find out. And we have him pretending to be dead. And then we have, you know, so like he's an antagonist from season three. Season four, he's stealing the RV. He's forcing Spencer to lie. Season five, he becomes a cop. And so he's like constantly like on the verge of arresting everyone. I feel like he has like a really like long and diverse run as someone who is setting themselves up in opposition specifically to Spencer, his girlfriend.
Yeah, no, I would completely agree. I think it's it is fascinating that on a show that sort of plays with this idea that patriarchy is, you know, always kind of looking over your shoulder, that it, you know, that Toby is in this role as like kind of always a little bit out to get Spencer. I mean, it reminds me of like when we talked about the Scream movies and that idea of, you know, any man could be dangerous enough to kill you at any point, even and perhaps especially your boyfriend.
Yeah, well, and also like we've talked before about like Paige being a character who it sometimes seems like there are different versions of her depending on who's writing that particular script.
Sure.
And I also like I feel like that is also true of a character like Shauna, who they never really seem to have decided on exactly what they're going to do with her from episode to episode. She's maybe flirting with Emily. Now she's introducing Emily to like an Olympic swimmer. Now she's taking Emily to meet up with Allison. Now she's trying to kill everybody. Like you never know. And so I feel like you get these people who like, we don't know exactly who they are. We don't know exactly what their motivation is, but they just might be villains. That's just how it is. We just accept that. Versus Tobey, who is like doing like openly villainous things, but who the show is always bending over backwards to say, what a trustworthy guy, what a prince among men, which really is a head scratcher.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. It really is. It's unfortunate too, because I think there is so much in there if you let a man be behind the hoodie. You know, I think there's so much to explore, but they just didn't want to go there, I guess.
I also have always just wanted like a better explanation of like who's doing what on the teams.
Yes, agree.
Like especially like when we talked about the whole mess that was like Thornhill Lodge. Like, okay, so what were Melissa and Jenna and I guess Shauna, what were they all doing just roaming around in the woods? Who set the fire? What is like, what? I really want like a Poirot style debriefing where like everybody who's been on the A team sits down in a room and talks about like what things they specifically were responsible for.
Well, right, because like at a certain point, as we talked about with like the Thornhill Lodge thing, it's like when everybody is there, nobody's individual role matters.
Yes, yes, exactly. Also, like, so what do you think about when we talk about like what does it matter? Like, what does it matter who's under the hoodie? What do we think about Spencer and Arya being the two liars who have worn the hoodie?
It's fascinating. I think it's really fascinating. I think that it speaks to a real sort of darkness and desire to access access a certain side of themselves that they feel that they can't access. And I think that it's like, it's fascinating that like both of them, for both of them, it's sort of triggered by this idea that they might lose their love interest. But for Spencer, it sort of takes her to this place of madness in a sense. For Arya, I don't even know what exactly you would call the Avataria era, because it's not, I don't know that it's strictly madness. Maybe it's mania, but it's certainly fascinating.
Do you think, like, do you think there are any circumstances under which Hannah or Emily could have been convinced to wear the hoodie?
I think that for Hannah, it would have had to have been a threat to either one of the other liars or her mom. I think for Emily, I don't know that Emily would have done it. I don't know that Emily would have done it. What about you?
I agree. And I think I'm hard pressed to imagine Hannah doing it either. I feel like the choices that they made for Spencer and Arya do tap into like a darkness in their character that is not otherwise there. I would also say when we talk sometimes about like storylines we would have liked to see or that we wish the show would have given us, I'm gonna say there is something that could make Hannah put on the hoodie. And it's not a threat to her mom. It's not a threat to I think she would do it to save Mona.
Well, I was just thinking about that. I was just wondering, like, what is there a world where she would go, where she would don the hoodie for Mona? I could see it. I could definitely see it. I think that there's a world where that could happen if she felt like it was the only way to save Mona from something.
Whatever.
She might do it.
I agree. Yeah, I think that if during the period when it seems like Mona has maybe been murdered and Hannah is like, you know, Mona being dead allows Hannah to have feelings that are much more straightforwardly loving towards Mona.
Sure.
I do believe that like if she had at that point felt like anything she could do would help like find Mona's killer or bring Mona back, I think she would have done it.
I think you're right. I think that it would have triggered something for her, an ability to kind of be more open and honest about like what Mona meant to her.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I love that. I love that little thought experiment for us.
Yes. Oh, I do too. Is there more that you would like to talk about with regards to villainy on this show?
I think we've done a great job covering it. I realized that I left Andrew off my list. Sorry, anybody who really wanted to hear us talk about Andrew. But of course, he goes under Piers and under Dude Who Wanted to Bang the Liars. So
he exists in those two categories for sure. Yeah,
100%.
For sure. Yeah. It's fascinating to think about the ways that these characters can drift between different categories and like we've sort of outlined who gets redeemed and who does not get redeemed.
And who like the show doesn't even seem to feel like needs redemption. Like, does Prezra ever really apologize to the liars as a group for what he did?
No. Well, he takes a bullet for them, and I think that's meant to.
Ugh, indeed.
Well, this was super fun, especially after the finale had like such a dud of an antagonist reveal. You know, it's fun to kind of relive like some of the early good ones, like Ian and Wilden and some of the
glory days.
So we are continuing on with the bonus content. We are going to have some special guests joining the podcast in the next couple of weeks. We are going to be doing some partner episodes. So next week, Kelsey, my girlfriend, will join the podcast. The week after that, Kristen will join the podcast. Let's see. she will not officially be your wife at that
point. No.
Yeah.
No,
but
no, we're
but,
getting married on the in June.
But close to it. Close to yes, it. Fiance. So if you have questions for either of our partners and want to one of the things that we are going to do is do a little quiz style to see if pitch some PLL storylines and see if, you know, if they think that these are actual storylines or something that we're making up. So if you have any ideas in that regard or questions or anything like that, we'd love to hear them. You can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can also check out our Spotify, Everybody A, Everybody Gay. And, of course, you can send us a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. Yeah, sure having a good time rolling out these bonus episodes.
I think it's going to be great. We should tell everyone that Kelsey has watched the show.
Yes.
So it has knowledge of the show. We should also tell them that, like, the audience will be meeting Kelsey at the same time that I am. Although I have, like, you know, heard much about her. We have never met, even on video or anything. So everyone will be meeting her for the first time. Yeah. Whereas you actually have met my partner in real life.
This is true.
When we were in your city. And I will also say that Kristen has, like, watched very minimal amounts of PLL at all, like bits and pieces of episodes when I've like asked her to. So it's really, really excited for both of those episodes. I think they're both going to be super fun in different ways.
Absolutely. And Kelsey specifically, she's watched like the first three seasons and then like the last bit of season 7 that I made her watch with me. So, so there's a lot in the middle there that, that she might not know about. we can have a fun time.
A lot happens.
All right. Well, until next time.
Take care.